Paul Shari is the author of Army of None, Autonomous Weapons and the Future of War. He jumps on the phone with us right now. Hey, Paul, how are you this morning? Why do I hit the phone wrong every time? Apologize, Paul. Are you there, sir?
Yes.
There you are. Hey, how are you?
Hey, good. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much for jumping on the phone with us. We appreciate it. I'm Matt Bubala. You're live on the air here at WGN Radio in Chicago. And I've been looking through your book, Army of None, Autonomous Weapons and the Future of War. And I guess there's a couple ways to look at this in my mind, as we were talking about before the news. The more that we have technology, I guess, taking the bullets, so to speak, or, you know, on the front lines, the less we risk human lives for our military service members. And so I would think that's a good thing, unless you tell me, yeah, but there's all sorts of inherent risk with that. I imagine with drone strikes, we have mistakes made all the time, even though at least our military members aren't right there getting hurt. I imagine there's ways that that goes wrong. The biggest thing that comes to mind in this day and age is hacking, because with all these autonomous type weapons, I imagine so much of it is done, you know, through uploads and downloads and things that could theoretically be hacked. And that sounds like it could start to get really dangerous as well.
Yeah, hacking is a major concern. We're seeing militaries, not just the United States, but others around the globe, deploy increasingly advanced robotics on the air and on the ground and undersea. There are at least 90 countries that have drones today, and at least 16 countries have armed drones. So they're already weaponized, as well as some non-state groups like the Islamic State also have armed drones. And so normally humans are in control of these, but when you start thinking about hacking, someone might jam their communications, then you start worrying about what might happen in this competitive environment where, you know, adversaries are going to find ways to try to manipulate these systems or take control of them.
Is it and that is dangerous. There's no doubt. I guess the more dangerous, the more control or the more advanced weaponry you're putting into things like this. Where is the future headed? What do you see 20 years from now, Paul? Are soldiers on the front lines a thing of the past? Do we have actual humanoid type soldiers someday? Or are we really just talking about drones and other, helicopter type things that could fly around and do a lot of little things?
We're going to see more robotics in a variety of settings. Having robots do, you know, humanoid robots that can walk like people is really challenging. So we're likely to see robots take a variety of different shapes and sizes. People have built sort of, you know, dog or size robots that might walk alongside a squad. Certainly we'll see aerial drones, even small ones like quadcopters that you can buy for hobby use. We're seeing the military use those, and I think we're likely to see in a relatively near future the ability for militaries to send a swarm of drones into a building to map that building all on its own, send back data to the soldiers outside about who's inside the building. Here's their faces. Here's their facial identity information connected to a biometric system to tell you who they are, who they have relationships with, who they know, what they've been up to. We could put on those drones automatic object identifiers that could scan everything in the building and could tell you here's where the weapons are. Here's if someone's carrying a rifle, here's where that is. So that kind of technology is having things physically navigate like a way a human does is very hard on the ground, but having a drone navigate through the air is much simpler, actually, because there's not as many obstacles in the way.
Yeah.
That technology is not that far off.
Well, it sounds like the type of technology that sounds great if you're in a meeting at the Pentagon and talking about our armed services, and sounds very frightening if we're talking about other countries or a rogue thing like ISIS, that it could be very bad for somebody else to have this technology to use against us.
Yeah, like a lot of military technologies, things that are advanced and impressive look great when you're the only one who has them, and not so great when both sides have them. And one of the challenges with this is it's in some ways the opposite of something like stealth technology that was built in secret U.S. defense labs, and the United States been able to largely keep under wraps for decades. This is something that's coming out of the commercial market. I mean, look, you can buy a quadcopter online that has more autonomy in it than an Air Force Reaper drone. Now, the Reaper drone is bigger, it carries more weapons, it's got longer range and endurance, but the level of automation that exists in things that are just out there on the commercial market is really advanced. They can do things like take off and land on their own, fly a GPS sort of programmed route on their own, navigate around obstacles. They can navigate, around trees so they don't hit them. So there's some pretty advanced things you could do, and all of this is based on software. So it spreads very easily. You can download, software for free online that can do a lot of different, very impressive functions. And so it's very hard to keep a lid on this technology.
Well, I have one of those. I have a quadcopter at home, a DJI Phantom 4 that you attach your iPad to, and I can put in the settings of where it's going to go and have it go, take video and come back pretty much on its own. You're right, without me seeing it in some ways. And I imagine that that's great and really cool for videographers and for people needing to see things, whatever. But if somebody figures out how to put a weapon on that thing, then it becomes a big problem. Is that where it's is the talk of autonomy? And when we're talking about drones like these quadcopters, is it going to be more, well, these things can go find stuff, they can see things? Or is there a real concern that eventually on these small light quadcopters, somebody's able to figure out some sort of small weapon to put on board?
Oh, people have already put weapons on them. I mean, when people get drones, whether it's an individual or a country, it seems like there's two things they do with them right away. One is they fly it someplace it doesn't belong. And the second thing is they put a gun on it. And so here in the United States, we've had people already arm their personal quadcopters, put videos of them online. There was a kid up in Connecticut who put a flamethrower on one and basted a turkey for Thanksgiving with it. So that's been done. If you're a reasonably competent, kind of engineer, somebody in kind of the do-it-yourself community, that's very doable.
When you say people are putting guns on their drones, are they figuring out how to fire them from the drones? I guess the flamethrower see working out. But people are figuring out how to rig a gun to their drone and then get the trigger pulled while it's in the air.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep, firing the trigger remotely in the air.
Do you worry that, we're talking about about terrorism and other countries, things like that. What about, I swear I just saw a headline tonight, and maybe I'm wrong, that said something like gang stops FBI thing with a drone swarm. Are these being used here in the United States by gangs and things like that? Is that possible?
Yeah, there was a news story just this week about that. Absolutely, by gangs, used by drug smugglers. We've had people people using drones, smuggling things in and out of prisons. So this technology it's so widely available. It's going to be used by people for all sorts of nefarious purposes.
So 15 years from now, when you and I are talking again, do you think you're going to say, it's really turned out good how autonomous a lot of our military has become? Or do you think you're going to say, I can't believe we allowed this to happen?
I don't know how you could stop it from happening. I mean, it's like trying to stop, air or something. It's everywhere. Yeah. There's no button you could push. There's no place you could go and say, we're going to, not let these plans get out of this building, because it's the technology's everywhere. It's advancing in a variety of settings. I mean, DJI, right? That's a Chinese company. So how would you stop that from happening?
Yeah,
it's just not possible.
I know it's a different subject, but the autonomous cars have not had great headlines lately. Do you think we're really heading to an America where we're accepting of getting into an automobile that we have no control over and don't actually see somebody driving?
It's interesting. We've known that this sort of moment was coming for a while, and that as we've seen people begin to introduce autonomous cars on the road, we've had this grace period for a little while of no accidents. And I think people were waiting that, we knew that there would be a world where we began to start to get accidents. There was, of course, a Tesla crash about a year, about almost 2 years ago now. And one of the first fatalities was somebody on an autopilot. But now we've had this rash of incidents very recently. I think it'll be interesting to see how the public reacts. The data suggests that right now, self-driven cars are not as good as humans. But as it's going to get better. You know, the self-driven cars are getting better. We're able to collect more data. We're able to fix these problems. When there's an incident, we can figure out what happened and then start to correct that. Humans aren't getting better as drivers. We're actually getting worse because people are texting and doing other things on their phone. Yeah. And so, you know, there will come a point in time where self-driving cars are better. There are probably some settings today where they're actually better if the, you know, the lighting conditions are right, if they're in an area that's been well mapped. You know, I think it will be interesting to see how the public reacts, because that's going to be the most critical thing. We're not going to get to a world where there are no accidents. That'd be great, but we don't need to get there to save lives. Look, 30,000 people die every year on American roads. That's like a 9/11 every month. It's just an incredibly catastrophic number of people who are killed in automobile accidents. So if we brought that down to, you know, 3,000 people who died a year from self-driving cars, which would seem like an awful lot, we'd still be saving tens of thousands of lives.
Yeah. Let me ask you, so jumping back to the weapons a little bit, part of your book is about not just like we're talking about, well, we have a lot of drones, we have all these things that we're controlling. Is there a point down the road where you see weapons making the decisions? We program them to search out something and make the decision on whether to fire, whether to do certain things. Is that possible that we're actually going to put decision making into the hands or the microchips of autonomous weaponry?
That's definitely where the technology is heading. The same kind of technology that we're seeing in self-driving cars is also applicable over in the military. And so the central question that the book grapples with is really what happens when a Predator drone has as much autonomy as a Google car? What are we going to be comfortable allowing this robotic vehicle to do in warfare when we're talking about life and death decisions? We're talking about an armed robotic system. And some of what it's doing is it has to be finding the enemy and it's attacking the enemy. You know, technologically, that's possible today in simple settings. I think we want to be careful how we talk about, you know, the machine making its own decisions. Some people might maybe think, well, it's violating its programming. Well, that's not what we're talking about. We're not talking about free will. We're not talking about, you know, machines rising up and turning on people like in Westworld or Terminator or something. You have a machine that follows its program, but it's programmed to make this decision, right? It's programmed to go out there and look for the enemy. And if it finds the enemy and the enemy meets its sort of targeting parameters, then go ahead and attack them. There are some simple places and where that exists today and where the technology will be possible. You know, the question is sort of as we go forward and these robots become more sophisticated, would militaries use that in wider settings?
You write in the book about researchers and people talking about advanced AI, artificial intelligence, and whether, you know, you really do talk about whether we would be concerned. Is it possible that machinery would turn against us if given too much power to make decisions and to learn? And I guess sort of to think and to feel. That's something that is so like science fiction from 20 years ago, but something that's actually being thought about now as they're creating these machines.
Yeah, one of the things that's very interesting about machine learning and artificial intelligence is that we're able to create these really advanced and sophisticated machines that can do all sorts of things and many times beat humans at various tasks. Now, they're pretty narrow tasks, playing chess, playing the Chinese strategy game Go, driving, we're getting there with driving, playing, you know, Jeopardy, the quiz game. But one of the things that's very fascinating about this is as we build these machines, they don't think like humans. So they could be very good at a specific task, but then they might get to some very similar related task, and they do very poorly all of a sudden. Reportedly, the AI program AlphaGo, which beat the top human at the strategy game Go, was very, very good. But if you change the size of the board, its performance would drop off significantly. And we see something similar, actually, in driving, where these self-driving cars are very good in some settings. And then in other settings, they're just terrible all of a sudden. They'll drive into a concrete barrier or something. And so this machine, this machine intelligence, we tend to sort of anthropomorphize things. We tend to anthropomorphize our pets. We think of them as sort of people and thinking like people. People will name their Roombas. That's a very common kind of trend. But the reality is this machine intelligence, it's like an alien form of intelligence. It's very different than how we think. And that's sometimes a challenge in how we interact with these machines.
Is there anything as Americans, I mean, I know the concern and I know the excitement over all this, but is there anything you recommend? Is it like, do we need to be talking to our congressmen? Do we need to be writing letters and making sure that, because you say on the one hand, you know, we want to be careful, we want to do the right things. On the other hand, we can't let other countries get a jump on us with this because that could be devastating as well. So what do we as Americans do? Just hope and prayer? Pray?
No, I mean, I think, look, I've written the book in part because I think this is an important issue that that more people should be aware of, and it involves, you know, to really grapple with this, you need to bring together people from a variety of settings. It's not just engineers and military professionals, but also lawyers and ethicists, and through some of our work, we've talked to even pacifists who you know, you think, well, why do they care? I mean, they're opposed to war overall, but they were very concerned about people's ability to be conscientious objectors. And when you take away the human, then there's no one who can stand up and say, "Well, I don't want to fight this war." So I think it's an issue that affects all of us. And I've written a book, you know, so that people could be more aware. And wherever you fall, I think on the debate, and there are some people that say, "Hey, these would be great weapons because we've got to get an edge at competitors," or because maybe humans aren't perfect in the war. And just the same way, eventually, self-driving cars will save lives. Well, maybe these robots could save lives in warfare. They could, you know, avoid hitting civilians. They could avoid committing war crimes like people do sometimes, or making mistakes as people do. You know, either way, wherever people view it, I think it's good for more people to be involved and aware and engaged on the topic.
Or we just have robotic medics.
Right, and there are lots of, well, that's the thing, is there are a whole lot of applications for military robotics that are not controversial, that's worth acknowledging.
Yeah.
You know, cargo resupply and data analysis and other things that are very simple and are not contentious.
It's fascinating look into the future. It's called Army of None, Autonomous Weapons and the Future of War. Paul Shari, thank you so much for jumping on the phone today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. We'll talk again. Army of None, and where is the future headed? Hopefully more safe for our guys, but a lot of pitfalls down the road as well. 312-981-7200. Matt Bubala with you. 720 WGN.